There we go. Catherine, are you going to the meeting next week?
Yes, I sure am.
Great, great. And we'll see you there. That's
great.
We're going to have quite a group there.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
We're going to have
lots. I'm excited. It's nice and short.
Yes. Who joined? Yes, who joined?
This is Amy Guilfoyle with Environmental.
Hey, Amy. How are you? Someone else just came in?
Rebecca Orozco at Cochise College.
Hey, Rebecca. We're, next week we're going to have an annual grantee meeting. We're going to have about 130 people. Who just joined? Did someone just join?
Yes, this is Derek.
Hey, Derek, how are
you? How
you
doing?
Good, good. With Novell.
Yes.
I think are you all coming? You're coming too, aren't you, to the conference?
Yes, sir.
Great. Well, we'll see you there in Alexandria. We're going to go over in small group sessions many of the things we do on the PLC, but we're going to break out into groups, and we're going to have some EPA people there. And usually at this conference, we also clarify certain issues that people have. One big issue that is coming up is our target groups. How do we address what target groups we address, and how do we address them? Do we are we looking really at people who are solely unemployed, or also people who may be upgraded? In other words, they might be working, and they come to the grantee program and go through it, and they've got additional skills that they can get a better job in the same company. And
okay.
Give the company skills. So we're going to be talking about all kinds of issues like that in different breakout sessions, and then we'll also have the regional reps there. One of the things that's going to be happening. Yes, who joined? Someone just joined?
Yeah, this is Amy again. I got disconnected.
Oh, okay, okay. One of the things that will be coming up in the next couple of weeks will be the EPA briefing they're going to have. Did you all get an email to that effect? I could put it in the notes. It's the new EPA job training RFP is going to be out in October, and Joe Bros of EPA is going to review the criteria for it and what the ranking criteria might be, what the eligibility requirements are, and he'll go through a little. Usually he has a PowerPoint, and we'll go through about 40 pages of PowerPoint about how to approach this grant. And I understand
okay.
There's going to be some changes this year from last year. Usually it's fairly routine, but I think and fairly similar to the year before. But as I understand, we'll find more about that next week. Other parts of the agency are interested in getting involved. And when we first did brownfields, it was solely remediation, and the jobs were remediation, cleanup-type jobs. And then in the last year and a half, we've moved into this weatherization and energy jobs, and I think we're going to be moving also into water-type jobs and other types of environmental jobs that we'll be training. And it does give us a challenge because we've got limited time in our program, and we've got, we only have a certain number of courses that we could teach. So we really got to zero in on our target group. But what we're going to do today is I thought, and Glow apologized, she's not going to be here. Her daughter is having a baby. And so it came at a really unopportune time because we've got the annual meeting next Monday, and her daughter was due last week, and she's overdue, so I think they're expecting the baby any day, so she's going down to stay with her, and then she'll be at the meeting. But she apologized for not being on the call. What we thought we would do today is kind of wrap up the whole idea of certifications. Who just joined?
Warren Adams-Levitt.
Hey, Warren.
Hi.
Good, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
You all got rained out last week, I understand. You got some rains in Chicago. Well, you're in Canada.
Yeah. I'm in Kansas City.
You got them too, didn't you?
It got some pretty intense rains, yeah.
Rain and storms. Yeah. Well, Warren, what we're going to do today is talk, kind of sum up this whole area of certifications and pretty much how it fits into the brownfields training. And as we were just mentioning, the problem is we've only got so many courses we can teach, so we've got to kind of pick and choose what direction we're going to go into. And, of course, if we review back at the last couple of calls, we could break these certifications down into the EPA certifications, the OSHA certifications, and other types of certifications. And, of course, you know, a certification is a way of ensuring that an individual or company or government or some organization, they have a certain level of training and they have a certain competency. It assures the person that hires that organization or person that they've gone through some set of standards. And, of course, the one thing about the environmental certifications in OSHA, many of these are in the eyes of the beholder. In other words, there are some that are mandatory, but then there's others that it really depends on the type of training that the student receives and a lot on how intensive that training is and what kind of experience they might have hands-on or hands-off. Certainly the OSHA certifications, particularly 40-hour, many of these are mandated. If you're going to go on a waste site, hazardous waste site, you have to have that OSHA 40-hour. And in the brownfields job training programs, they require that everyone gets the 40-hour waste site worker training. It's about a $500 certification. If you were to go to a private sector company, that's about what they would charge to give that cert. Other certifications that OSHA requires depends on the job that you're going to be performing. Many of our grantees are providing the 10-hour construction and the confined space. Whenever you go into a confined space, whether it be a tank or you go into a hole that's been dug, or you might go into a very small, and people realize if you're going into weatherization, you often will need this confined space reg. Ladders, some doing electrical. What are you all... yes, did someone just join? Okay. What are you all teaching in terms of the OSHA regs? Over in Durham, what OSHA regs are you teaching?
We actually just finished up a program, so I'm not sure what we're doing for the new one. I mean, are you talking about in terms of the 40-hour HAZWOPER?
Yeah, 40-hour HAZWOPER.
Yeah, we're doing 40-hour and then a 10-hour OSHA.
The 10-hour construction. Those are the two really common ones. In Kansas City, are you doing, in terms of just the OSHA regs, is that pretty much what you all are doing also?
Yeah, just 10-hour and the 40-hour HAZWOPER.
Yeah. And those are really two very basic ones. You may end up finding you're going to have to get into the confined space also as time goes on. But again, you know, we're somewhat restrained by our curriculum and how long our course can be.
I think we actually used to do confined space, but just in terms of available funding, couldn't justify it. And those other two were so much more critical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They definitely they are critical. Those are probably the key OSHA regs or certs that you need. And of course, those certs are pretty much spelled out in it's 29 CFR 1910-120 for OSHA 40-hour. What happens is they publish these requirements in the Federal Register quite a few years ago, and these are Code of Federal Register, CFRs they call them, and the OSHA regs are the 29 CFR regs. Anything 29 CFR is an OSHA reg, the 1910 is the 40-hour. The confined space one is 1910-146. It's 1910.146 would be the confined space. And if you were to Google or go on the CF Code of Federal Registers to that, you could find out exactly what the requirements are, what has to be in that curriculum, what has to be the training. In terms of the 10-hour construction, I think that's a 49 CFR. It's what they call 172.704. And again, they very, very much define everything that has to be in that training course to get that certification. EPA, they have their own set of certifications also. These tend to overlap with the OSHA. EPA was the lead agency in lead. It often is more relevant to HUD than it is the EPA because of the housing, and most of the money is in housing rehabilitation, low-income housing. And when lead was first introduced, it was because kids were picking up lead paint chips and they were putting them in their mouths and getting high exposure to lead, so that most of the regs came to evolve to protect children, and that backed up into the housing. And it was, what was it, pre-78 housing that had lead paint before they phased out the lead paint. And so anything before that, you had to start testing to see if there was lead in the paint. And then if there was, you had to go through a set of procedures. And they, quite a few years ago, they came up with an elaborate set of lead credentials that were required. These were inspector and worker and supervisor contractor, and you had to have an approved curriculum, approved trainers, and then the workers had to be approved. And they, what happens in all of these regs, as far as EPA goes, is states have the ability to take over the certification process if they want. They can say, we want to, and same with OSHA, we want to control the certification process, and we may have more stringent requirements than federal government, so we want to have that control. Usually they're about the same, but there might be certain local circumstances where they want to impart additional requirements. So on those adopted states, and you could find that out fairly easy by checking with your state EPA or OSHA or health department, if they've adopted their own set of certifications. If a state has not adopted these certifications, then they fall back to the federal regs. But in the case of lead, it evolved out of EPA. And then, of course, in the last year, this new replacement for lead workers came along to close some loopholes and make it a little more formal. And that's the RRP, the Renovation, Repair, and Paint Law. And it's lead-safe renovation, repairs, and painting has caused quite a bit of controversy because it's a little more comprehensive. It requires the contractor to give the homeowner a brochure. It requires workers, at least one worker that's on the job, to be trained and certified. Company may have to be trained and certified. So it's quite an elaborate set of certifications. But in the case of lead, the not only does the trainer have to be certified, you have to have a certified curriculum and a certified trainer. And those can also be adopted by the state, or they'll fall back to the federal government. But we're finding a lot of the Brownfields job training programs are seeing that the whole area of lead remediation in housing, because there's a huge influx of HUD money, is a good place for jobs. And so a lot of them are getting into that. Is anyone on the call doing RRP training right now?
Yes,
we are.
Rebecca Rocco, Cochise College. We're offering it here at the college now.
Great, great. Are you and the purpose of that is for rehabilitation of housing?
Well, mostly for us, it's people, because it's a 1978 date, and most of the house, anything in on campus was built before that, plus much of the community. We're getting lots of interest. Everybody here in maintenance at the college has to go through the course, and that's what got us started, but then now we're expanding it to open it up for the community as well.
Great. And Warren, you all are doing that too, aren't you?
Yes. We're providing it as part of both our home weatherization as well as our remediation training programs.
Mm-hmm. And are you using there is a complete curriculum online that you can get. Did you all develop your own curriculum, or did you use the EPA developed curriculum?
Quite frankly, I'm not really sure. It's the OAI. The OAI folks in Chicago are nationally authorized to provide the RRP training. And so up till now, they flew into Kansas City to do the training. We're hoping eventually to get some local people certified as RRP trainers, but just couldn't do it in time for this program.
And
we're also using an authorized trainer who comes from Tucson. Okay. We're also hoping to get our own trainer at some point. We're in the midst of the Pathways Out of Poverty grant here as well, and we're going to be offering HAZWOPR training for that.
Great. You were successful, and did you partner with someone on that? Pathways Out of Poverty, just for those other people on the call, was a major, major $500 million let out to usually fairly large block grants to communities.
We're acting as a vendor to our local council of government under the North. I'm trying to. It's NARC is the acronym, but four councils of government got the grant, and we're, if it's part of one of the four, we're doing all the training.
Fantastic. There haven't been so many people that have been lucky enough to get Pathways Out of Poverty money, and that's great. We're able to tap into that. For those of you who are not familiar, you may track down in your cities if they have a Pathways grant and what they're doing in that way, because they have quite large, most of those blocks were quite large blocks of money that went out to communities to do exactly what Cochise is doing. That's great. And so now you're hiring as a consultant to do the training, and I think that's what most people are going to have to do early on until this matures a little bit more, because it's not trivial to get certified in training. You have to jump through those hoops to get your trainer certified. But once you put on a few courses, then that's another thing. Once you find that it's supporting itself, it's something that you might want to go to. And then you become registered, and you can provide training to other people also.
And that's kind of our hope for we do get the Brownfields Job Training Grant for the future.
Mm-hmm. I think it'd be great. It'd be great. And in your target group, that is a perfect target audience. There is an awful lot of HUD money going in that direction. You mentioned the Pathways Out of Poverty money. And then there's just general funding and through the education systems. As you said, that whole area of schools and school renovation, they went through that whole asbestos renovation issue many years ago with the asbestos. They're going to go through it again with the lead. When we talk about those EPA grants, we talked about the RRMP being the big one, but then we've got the asbestos, which is still active. And is anyone out there doing asbestos training right now?
Yeah, we are.
That's great. That's one that's been a sleeper, but coming back, because people are finding that as a remediation job, it's a great certification to have. Anytime you're working on pipes or You might be in school still doing some renovation work. You've got that asbestos issue. How about mold? Anyone doing mold at this point?
Yeah,
yes,
we are.
We do as a separate topic in our remediation program, and we touch on it as part of the 40-hour house whopper in our weatherization program.
Mold is a little trickier because there really haven't been really established standards. Interesting enough, when we talk about certifications and standards, I mentioned EPA, OSHA, and others, and one of those others is you start talking about insurance companies, and when we start talking about microbiological hazards, we talk about mold. We're talking about a function of temperature and humidity, and some people are highly sensitive to mold, and others aren't sensitive at all. And it a few years ago looked like it was going to be a really major issue, and it has been in some areas. But then in other areas, it's just kind of waned a little bit. It came along and then kind of went by the wayside. It seems like when there's issues, people have won cases where they've had to tear down the entire house because of mold and rebuild. There have been lawsuits, but EPA hasn't been able to. They haven't really been successful in setting up any kind of a certification or worker training program. So you all just pretty much develop your own curriculum for that, I guess, or include it as part of a broader program. Would that be correct? What about radon? Anyone doing any radon? That's a sleeper also. Mostly in the Midwest where people have basements, and you have to have two contributors there. You have to have the potential for radon in the soil that might leak through basements. And it's, again, one of those more local type of certifications. Then we get to the weatherization. And weatherization is another one of those certs that is not EPA right now, and it's not not OSHA, and it's nobody right now. It's BPI has got about five certifications, but none of them fit the installer, which is our target group. And I know Warren there in the city's done. You're working with the WAP variant of the WAP requirements, aren't you? There is an organization. There are two groups. Well, there's actually three groups. There is BPI came into this early with the Building Performance Institute, and they were the people that did the LEEDS programs, and mostly concerned about building and building environmentally sound buildings. And they moved into the weatherization area. Unfortunately, most of their weatherization is for professional people, might be engineers or have a fairly require a high degree of training. They have building analysts, envelope professional, heating professional, air conditioning or heat pump professional. Our target audience tend to be the installers. And the BPI certs don't seem to really fit. Is anyone using BPI out there at this point?
Yeah, we're using a modified BPI certification. They do have a weatherization technician certification, evidently, and we're using a local variant of that.
Oh, great.
If you will.
Okay, great. The second group that I mentioned with BPI, the Weatherization Assistance Program, was created in 76 to help low-income families who didn't have resources to become more energy efficient. And it's in all 50 states, District of Columbia, and tribes. And that has grown quite a bit. And what there is quite a bit of materials available. It's It's actually, and I put in the notes, it's WAPTAC, W-A-P-T-A-C, and they've got quite a bit of reference materials. And actually, they've teamed up with HUD, and they've got some weather. HUD's got weatherization contacts in every region, and then every state actually has some through HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development. They have a weatherization initiative, and each state, I'll put that in the notes. Each state has a weatherization contact and a website, and it might be something that is worth going to. We're finding that HUD is the organization that is pushing a lot of money into weatherization and setting up of a large, pretty much a large bureaucracy in terms of weatherization, pretty much under the WAP program, and they've got requirements. And a lot of the curriculum that are being developed on Installer are kind of following these WAP guidelines. Is anyone else besides OEA out there working with weatherization installers at all?
Part of our Pathways Out of Poverty grant is for weatherization, and we're contracting a company who has certification to come in and do a weatherization boot camp for the people who are coming through the program.
Great. Well, at the annual meeting, we'll probably be talking about that, and you may want to look at various curriculum that might be available for the target group that you're going to be addressing. And right now, there's not the certification will be issued by you. So what happens is you would provide a training plan, and you'd have your goals and objectives and your the points that you're covering in your course, and you'd actually have a pre- and post-test and keep those on file. And then when you market your students as having the weatherization certification, basically, as I had said early on, certifications are kind of in the eyes of the beholder. If they look at your certification and they say, well, you've got a weatherization technician, what is that? You know, and the OSHA ones that are mandated by law, we know what those are because those go back to the Federal Register. But then all these other ones, whether it's BPI or whether it's your own, when there's nothing, or mold, when there's not a set of standards that are published, then you've got to almost provide or publish your own set of standards. So what you have to be ready to do, and this might apply to Coach Heath, is be prepared when you're talking to this contractor, what are my students going to learn? What are their skills and knowledges going to be as a result of taking this training course? So when I go to market them, I could say they have the weatherization installer certification issued by us. And they say, well, what does that mean? And this is what it means. And you can give them a set of standards that you've developed that these skills and knowledges will be possessed by these people. And probably what you've done in Kansas City is those have to go back to the WAP standards, the WAP standards, because HUD may require those minimum standards to be taught.
Yeah, that's correct, Mike. And the other thing, and I'm curious if people are doing this elsewhere, but we made one of the objectives in our grant to the EPA was to begin to develop a local or regional or state level standard and weatherization for weatherization technician curriculum, and because eventually it's going to mean more if we can get, in our case, Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska to agree to the same curriculum and certification standard, then it's going to be more valuable to our folks. And so we got the city of Kansas City saying that this certification is necessary for jobs through their office of weatherization, but we want to build that into a state level standard in at least Missouri and Kansas. And
I'm curious
if other people are doing that sort of thing.
Well, it kind of happened in the lead area where states had reciprocal agreements where the states adopted the lead certification, requirement. So in other words, Illinois had theirs, and Iowa had theirs, and Wisconsin would have theirs. And then they formed, after they adopted that, they adopted these reciprocal agreements so that if you got a certification in Iowa, you could use it in Illinois or you
yeah.
Indiana. And what you're doing is exactly perfect. It's a precedent. It would be nice if it was a national card or a national certification, but it isn't now. And even some of these other certifications, they're not, because what happens is you could have a national certification, but a state might have more stringent standards, so that certification isn't good in that state. And
yeah.
The logical question is, how do I find out? And the way to find out is you've got to talk to your OSHA or your DNR or your HUD, whoever is the responsible agency. In the end, it's the person that's going to be hiring you to do the work. That's
right.
And in fact, when you look at the fine print and the 40-hour HAZWOPER, in the end, the responsibility of HAZWOPER training is in the eyes of the is the responsibility of the employer, so that he's going to want people with HAZWOPER training, but in the end, he's responsible for it. And because he may have particular pollutants on his property that are not in HAZWOPER. We ran into this with the Defense Department when we were going to Pentax. All of a sudden, they have everything that's nasty that's on the planet. They have. And these aren't covered in HAZWOPER. Well, they need special training. And that becomes the responsibility of the employer. So the 40-hour HAZWOPER is the beginning point, and then you move on from there. But that's a great idea. I think that'd be great to bring up next week too, in terms of moving to the extent that we can move these standards to national. It makes your people not only more mobile but more employable.
Exactly. Yeah. I guess we see it as part of the development of weatherization as a real field, and that if we start by developing regional standards, you know, eventually those will end up being, hopefully, being merged into a national standard. But you got to start somewhere, and so it's a way to start building it up from the bottom, as opposed to just waiting for it to be defined from the top.
You're right. So. And clearly, the amount of weatherization may be different in Alaska than it would be in Florida, but the process is still the same. And in weatherization, you're still doing the same audits, and you're still looking at the same areas of heat loss. So your insulation requirements may be different, but the process for inspection and assessment would all be the same. So there wouldn't be any reason you couldn't have a standard like that. I think that those are, and I think you all have hit it. When we kind of sum it up, and we're going to finish this call up here real quick, but when we talk about these certifications in general, we're all doing the 40-hour. We got to do that. It looks like most of us have all got to do the 10-hour. We may have to do confined space when you're getting into weatherization. To the extent you're going to be doing environmental remediation, you may be going into lead next, and perhaps asbestos. But if you're working with HUD and housing, and particularly if there's not lead in the area you're in, housing is going to be this major elephant in the room with the WAP and with all the low-income housing funding for increased efficiency moving into that. The concern about the weatherization is one that you have to be careful of is seeing who else in your town is doing it, because there's a lot of federal money going into the weatherization, there's a lot of training that's being initiated now. And in some areas, the training hasn't caught up with the jobs have not caught up with the training. So what's happened is the money has not hit the streets yet. And so there's lots of people who are qualified to do weatherization, but the jobs may not be there. In some cases, they are. It appears to us that in the Northeast, there's lots of work in weatherization. And as you move west and south, it doesn't seem to be such the case. And I'm not sure how it is in in your areas, but it's one of those things that's fairly local. So you have to check that out before you jump too far into weatherization. So.
Hello, Mike.
Yes.
This is Al Dyson. This is my very, very first time being on the call, so I'm way behind. What I'd like to know is three quick questions. Who was the person speaking about the grant just a few minutes ago with EPA?
That was probably me, Warren from Kansas City.
Okay, I got your email. I'll send your email, Warren. So what's your email? Which one is you on here? A?
I'm W period Adams Levitt.
Adams?
At Yahoo. Yeah. Warren Adams Levitt. W period Adams Levitt at Yahoo.com.
Okay. I'll send you an email. The second question was the lady that mentioned the weatherization boot camp. Who was that speaking?
This Cochise College, Rebecca Orozco.
Okay. I just have to know by email address. Which one is your email?
Orozco R at Cochise.edu.
Okay. I'll send you an email. And then last, you mentioned, were you saying EPI or VPI? I'm not familiar with who that is. What is that? Mike mentioned it several times.
Yeah, anyone want to take that? It's Building Performance Institute, BPI. I could put something in the notes to how to get to their site.
Okay.
It's BPI is a nonprofit organization. They're interested in building better buildings, and they took the lead in this whole area of better building performance and weatherization and LEEDs, environmentally sound buildings.
That's the green program LEED.
But the BPI is a good place to start in weatherization. We'll send you some notes. WAP is another one. I'll send you some websites to go to in terms of weatherization.
All right.
Well, we're going to meet in about 2 weeks. We're going to have the annual meeting next Monday, and we'll probably talk a little bit about that. And then we're going to move into some issues regarding placement of placing students and placement strategies. So hope to see some of you guys.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to miss the one next week. I'm headed to South Africa.
Wow. Well,
man.
You want to take some of us with you?
Well, I need to get y'all contact information. Actually, I'm going over my company, Dyson Engineering and Technical Services. I'm going to be talking to some of the energy-related companies over there, all the way from the major utilities to businessmen. And one of the things we are going to find out is exactly what are their needs. I mean, they've said anything from helping them with their power industry all the way down to green energy, energy efficiency. So I'm really going over on this mission for 12 days to identify what their needs are. So like these weatherization programs and things that you guys have been kind of mentioning, this is my first time on the call. It may be some business opportunities there. So
I'm very
interested in finding out what each of you guys are doing, and then if I hear anything when I'm in Africa, I can say, "Oh yeah, I know a company that's doing that."
we'll give you.
Who's that speaking again?
This is Al Dyson, A Dyson at MSN.com. It's
okay.
A_Dyson@MSN.com. If any of you guys want to send me a little description of what you're doing, I'll be glad to take it with me because. Two or three other companies that I'm working with, I'm kind of like taking a one-page profile, and then that way if I hear anything or they bring up anything that I'm not really doing, I want to make sure that I pass it on because they're saying they want to do more business with the minorities and black businesses in the United States. So
We'll put those in the notes, and anyone who wants to send some information to Al about their program, just send it on over to him. And,
that's D-Y-S-O-N, Al, Dyson?
That is _ D-Y-S-O-N. I'm on the notes today.
Okay.
My email is up there, A_Dyson, D-Y-S-O-N, @MSN.com.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Where are you, Mr. Dyson? This is my first teleconference too. My name is Sabrina Jackson. I'm with ECT, Environmental Consulting and Technology.
Okay. Yeah, I'm actually located in Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, okay.
Okay, where are you located?
I'm in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, okay.
Slash Georgia.
Do we have your email? Sabrina, we do have your email. Okay.
I got that information from Ms. Kathleen last week.
Yes, Kathleen Curry. Well,
mm-hmm.
I'll be sending out some notes, and I'll put Al's address in there and Warren's address and also so you could correspond between and send information and Rebecca's information too. You could correspond amongst each other. And then we'll meet again in a couple of weeks, and some of you hopefully will see up in Alexandria next Monday and Tuesday.
I started too late, so maybe next year.
There we go. Next year when you've got your Brownfields grant all set. Okay.
I'll see you in Alexandria. See you next
okay.
week.
Good. Okay. Y'all take care. Have a good week now.
You take
care. Thank you.
Alexandria. Bye-bye.
Bye.